My name is Shamila. I'm the owner of Rebecca Designs 22.
Hello, this is Christian from Icarus Midair.
Hi, my name is Bethany. I am the maker of Bin Bin.
Hi, I'm Mary.
And I'm Tess. And this is the Etsy Success Podcast.
We're part of the seller marketing team here at Etsy, broadcasting from Etsy's headquarters in Brooklyn, New York.
This podcast is powered by Etsy and is your source for tips on improving your shop and for inspiration from your fellow sellers.
Now, before we get started today, we have a small favor to ask and a reminder for those who have been listening. If you haven't filled out our survey yet, we would really, really appreciate it if you did. We just want to learn more about you and what you like and what you dislike. All you have to do is head to etsy.me/podcast survey. The link is also in the description for this episode, but again, that's etsy.me/podcast survey. Thanks.
So, Mary, did you take advantage of any Black Friday or Cyber Week sales this year?
You bet I did. Yeah.
Tell me more.
So one of the things that I bought was a sheet set that I almost definitely wouldn't have been able to buy, at least this year. But they were running a 20% off sale. And so I felt like I couldn't pass it up. I had to buy it. Mm-hmm. I wasn't even planning on making that purchase until 2018 at the earliest. But here I am now, I have the sheet set.
Yeah, I actually didn't take advantage of the sales this year, which was silly of me.
A pity.
I know. But I've done a similar thing in the past where there was this jewelry seller that I'd been following for a while, and I wasn't really able to afford to buy from her. But one year she had a holiday sale, so then I ended up buying one of her rings for the first time. And now 4 out of the 5 rings that I'm wearing are from her. So that's another really great benefit of running a sale, is converting a follower or a fan of your items into a customer.
Right.
And, you know, I know that there are some intimidating factors of running a sale. You know, you don't want to undervalue your work and you have to make sure that you're still making a profit.
But there's also a lot of benefits and profits for that, too. So one of the things is reaching new customers like Tess.
Hello.
And you can also get rid of slower selling inventory. Another really effective way to use a sale is a free shipping sale. Yeah. I think a lot of us have been in the situation where you get free shipping after you spend a certain amount and you do everything you can to meet that minimum so you don't have to pay for the shipping.
Mm-hmm.
I know this happens to me most frequently when I am buying for my beautiful baby Buster, my special needs cat. So he needs special food, and so most of the time I have to order it online. It's the easiest way to do it. And, of course, their free shipping minimum is maybe $5 more than what my case of food is. Mm-hmm. And so I do everything I can to meet that minimum. And so I end up spending $15 on, like, probiotic treats for my angel cat. And in the end of the day, I spend $15 more than if I just paid for the shipping.
But you have more treats for Buster.
Yeah, it's a win-win situation in that way. Everybody can agree that Buster deserves more treats.
Exactly. So today I talked with a couple who have run a few different types of sales in their shop. Sarah Parker started her shop Milk and Honey Luxuries in Richmond, Virginia in 2011. Eventually, her husband Ryan quit his job to help run the business with her. They sell hand-stamped silverware, which has earned them over 60,000 sales at this point. They now sell their items wholesale, and they've been featured by major press outlets like People Magazine and The Ellen DeGeneres Show. So thanks for being with us today, Sarah and Ryan.
Absolutely. Hi.
Hi, it's good to talk to you.
So Sarah, how did you learn to stamp silverware?
I taught myself kneeling on the living room floor of our house. Yeah, making a terrible mess and lots of noise. I had lots of vintage silverware that I was already selling to brides and things, and I saw how it can be stamped and personalized. I thought, that sounds great. So I went to the store, got some stamps, gave it a shot. I always loved art and being creative. And I was a photography major and a dance major in the early days. And everybody said, you can't make a living at that. You have to find something kind of 9 to 5. And that's what led me into nursing. But I still had that drive and that need to create stuff. So I started doing it just for gifts and for home decor. You know, I was a young mother and wife and would see things in like Pottery Barn that I wanted but couldn't afford, so I'd make it myself. And I did a lot of furniture recoverings and things like that. And a lot of my friends started saying, you know, there's this place called Etsy where you can sell this stuff. And I checked it out and thought, well, this could be a fun kind of side thing to do. And almost immediately I was like, no, this is what I need to be doing. This is I kind of hid that for a while because I figured everybody would think I was crazy, but finally told Ryan that I'm loving this. This is what I want to do. I don't want to be a nurse anymore. I want to do this. And I expected him to think I was insane, but he was really supportive. I was surprised by that. I think you actually thought I was insane, but were nice enough not to say it.
Yeah, luckily I bit my tongue.
So Ryan, tell me about your role in the business.
It kind of got to the point where, you know, she just couldn't do it by herself. You know, I wasn't particularly happy with what I was doing. And so it just seemed that it would be better for me to be the one to help her. So she taught me how to stamp. You know, I just started practicing. And then in the beginning, I helped out with just answering messages. I could just jump in, spend an hour or two answering messages, and it would just create more sales, which kind of earned my keep, you know. In 2013, when I left my job to work for Sarah full time, we added the cutting boards. I dealt with the, you know, the cutting and the sanding and the majority of the work with that. And now Sarah spends a lot of time in, you know, exercising her creativity. And I've gotten to the point where I can just kind of hammer out all of the made to order orders while she works on new products.
So your products have a lot of personality, and the props in your photography really help bring that to life. So I was wondering, what's your approach to styling your photos?
I try to go less is more. I have started using a few more props, mainly because customers would not know, are they getting a tablespoon? Are they getting a teaspoon? You know, what's this going to look like when I get it? And so I wanted to have something in there to kind of for scale. But I like the really clean white background, let the product stand center.
I noticed that your listing photos tend to have that element, but then on social media, you have a lot of really beautiful imagery.
Yeah, they're a little busier, and I think that's great for social media because it shows it in action. But I would worry making that a main listing photo, it might just be too busy or confuse the customer as to what they're actually paying for. For Instagram, we have a really big foodie following. So a lot of the photos there are food-based. Lots of taking pictures of our lunch and our dinner and putting in whichever spoon for it. Whereas on Facebook, our followers there tend to be more home decor and lifestyle. So there's a lot less food pictures on there and more nice sweater backgrounds, seasonal pine cones and things like that.
Oh, so how did you learn that? Like, how did you learn who was following you on Instagram versus Facebook?
Taking a lot of time to look at who interacted with us, which people would tag us in posts was a big one on Instagram. I would notice that it was a lot of foodie accounts, a lot of healthy living, food-based people would buy and then repost our items. And so I realized that that was kind of the draw there. On Facebook, I didn't see as much with other accounts or other businesses, like with the food accounts. I saw more just people who wanted to interact with a brand where they might buy something for their house or for a gift, and were less interested in what sort of vegan meal they might eat it with and more just how it fit into their life.
You have a lot of nice festive photos in your shop right now. So what tips do you have about marketing your shop for different seasons or holidays?
I went to the craft store and just kind of bought armloads of everything that looked like it could be seasonal and just took a gajillion pictures when I got home. And a lot of things that I thought, this is it, this is going to be the prop for every picture. When I looked at it after it came out, I was like, oh, it looks terrible. Throw it in the trash can. And some of the things that I didn't care for ended up looking great. So just I experimented so much with different things. Also, I took products that we already sold year round and would just photograph them differently, like, you know, maybe with some red berries or some holly leaves or something like that. And then that lets us market it specifically as a Christmas gift or a holiday present. And then I can just change the photos out after the holidays and it can go back to being anniversary or wedding or whatever we normally market it as.
Another thing to keep in mind is how early you have to start planning for the upcoming seasons. Amy at American Heirloom helped us understand that. Like she was saying, you know, she starts Christmas planning in the summer.
Yeah.
And it just seems so weird. You know, it's 95 degrees outside and you got to track down some holly leaves with red berries on
them. Yeah, we're right now doing Valentine's Day behind the scenes is what we're making and photographing and working on. And I'm actually probably a little late on that.
You have experience with running sales and you offer free shipping on certain items. So how have you ensured that you're making a good profit margin when you're discounting your listings like this?
I'm running a few tests, for instance, with this free shipping. We have a few items that are just straight free shipping. And then we have other items that are free shipping if you spend $100. And that kind of lets me feel out what are our customers looking for? Do they just want that one thing free fast now in a jiffy? Or, you know, is it the added value of getting the free shipping when they place more of their Christmas or holiday orders with us? it's deceptively easy for us compared to other people because our stuff is so light. You know, a spoon is an ounce. And we already had it priced so that extra things shipped free always, like since 2011. So if you bought one spoon or 20 spoons, you just had that one small shipping fee. And we never put any profit in our shipping. So we wouldn't lose any profit by not having the shipping cost. We picked 100 for our cutoff. I wanted to be sure to price it higher than our average order so I knew whether the customer was making that purchase because they were enticed by the free shipping rather than just, you know, oh, I spent $50 and hey, look at that free shipping too.
The early results show us that customers are buying more to obtain the free shipping.
Yeah. I noticed a few other listings you had that just looked like they had been marked down, like a discount, maybe like a percentage off.
Yeah, the sale section. I picked some things that weren't huge movers, you know, that they were easy to make and cute, and I didn't want to get rid of them, but they weren't really flying off the shelf. And I thought that would be a good way to experiment on whether or not the sale was a big draw for our customers. You know, things that maybe sell twice a year all of a sudden are selling 8 times in a week. Okay, our customers want things on sale, and you know, we need to re-examine that and figure out how to work that into our company.
Yeah, I think that the biggest thing a lot of sellers struggle with for discounts or free shipping or whatever you're doing sale-wise is just figuring out the numbers.
Well, yeah, it's important also to make sure that your product is priced correctly to start with, you know?
Yeah.
We learned that lesson with the different wholesale partnerships that we participated in. With these sales and the free shipping and stuff, if you price the product correctly before it goes on sale, then it gives you the freedom to take advantage of the different free shipping over 100 and 10% off or whatever kind of sale promotion you want to run. If you're only making a bare minimum profit yourself, then you might not have the freedom to run one of these promotions.
Or if you're putting your profit in your shipping. That's a mistake I see a lot too. Like when I shop just for supplies and clothing and things that mm-hmm. I go out to shop for, I'll see a great price and I put it in my cart and I'm like, oh, come on, I ship all day long. I know that's not what that costs. You know, you're putting profit in that. And then I don't want to complete that purchase. And then that shop, if they did want to run a free shipping sale, is going to lose a lot of their profit because that's where they've hidden it. And so you definitely have to be smart about how you price your things before you do something like that.
What advice would you give to a seller who wants to run a sale for the first time?
I would tell a new seller to experiment. That's been the biggest thing that's been helpful to me, is just to do a little bit of A/B testing and try this way and that way and see what your customers respond to more. If you're going to do any kind of free shipping promotion, pay close attention to how heavy your items are. My gut told me that even though I'm very cautious and was a little concerned about the idea of running sales, that I could find a way to experiment with it that was still in my comfort zone, using a smaller percentage and only on a very limited number of items that weren't exactly flying off the shelf anyway. That let me test these waters in a way that still felt like my hands weren't being forced to do it.
I think with the testing the waters part too, she set it up in a way where she could go into her Etsy stats and look and really see. She mentioned like the A/B testing and stuff. So she could see, look at the data and see, you know, is this working? Are we getting higher average order values? Mm-hmm. You know, and so a seller that is hesitant, you know, they might want to consider taking a small, like, you know, just doing something targeted and just seeing if it works and compare it against something similar at a full value price, you know. You can structure a sale in a way where you're not taking as big a hit to your profit margin as you might initially have thought, and get some valuable data to determine, should I proceed with this or maybe this isn't for me?
Yeah, because I don't think every customer is looking for the cheapest or the fastest. And we didn't know if our customers were or not. Our name even has the word luxury in it. Are these people who are looking for something on sale, or is that actually going to turn them away from our shop and drive them out? So it was definitely testing the water slowly.
By targeted for us, it means which products to put on sale and how much to reduce the, you know, what's the percentage value off. Because we have a different profit margin in the cutting boards than we do in our coffee mugs, than we do in our spoons or in our coasters. You know, everything's a little bit different. Everything costs more. Everything has a particular amount of time involved in it. So we might be able to do something on spoons that we could never think to do on coffee mugs, for example. It's definitely more expensive to ship. That's the biggest limiting factor on the coffee mugs and the cutting boards.
The spoons, I would say the wordier spoons, I'm less likely to put on sale just because that's 30 hammer blows.
The labor involved.
Whichever, yeah, the labor.
How did you make sure that your prices were set so that you could give a wholesale discount?
The usual wholesale is 50% off. So you have to look at what your costs are and price it basically so that you can still make your profit at half. And on some items, that just makes it too expensive and it doesn't make sense to wholesale it. A spoon that should be $14 should be $14. I can't suddenly call it $24 just because I still want to make my $14 in wholesale. So you have to be really careful with the pricing.
Yeah, but right at the end of the day, you're not overpricing it. You're just correctly pricing it.
Right.
And so that $14 spoon, while it can't be $24, maybe it can be $18. And $18 is what it should be. And that gives you the freedom to mark it off, mark the wholesale discount and sell in bulk.
Mm-hmm. How did you go about kind of crunching the numbers to figure that out?
We have a threshold for instance, spoons. We won't pay over a certain dollar amount for the spoons. That's just the spoon. That doesn't take into consideration the polish that we have to buy and the packaging materials. One day we went through the entire process and then we took every single step of it and divided it by however many spoons we're going to do. So for instance, it might cost us 25 cents per spoon to package it. It might cost us 4 cents per spoon to polish it. So we have all that number. And then we have to figure out, well, our time is worth something as well. How much money do we want to make per hour? Or how much money do we feel like is fair for us per hour? And now we got to figure out how long does it take us to make the spoon, clean the spoon, package the spoon, drive it to the post office, and literally break that down into minutes. And so that gives you a good idea of, here's the cost of my item, here's the cost of my time, and so this is what my total cost is. Don't forget, the government is going to take a portion of that as well, because you're going to owe them taxes. You know, you've got your Etsy fees and everything you can think of. There's some people might need electricity or water to produce their products. So as precise as you can be with how much is in each individual product, now you can extrapolate that into, all right, this particular customer wants 150 of these. And so I know how much time and money 150 is going to take us to make. So it gives you a better idea of what it should be priced at for your retail customers, then you can make the reduction for wholesale.
What do you think sellers should think about before they take the plunge into wholesale? Like, what do you wish that you'd known?
We probably wish we'd have known that it's not just making the product that's the biggest time suck. It's really packaging it up. And especially if you're dealing with a big retailer, they've got a lot of specifications and rules. And so if I could go back to before we entered into these wholesale partnerships, one thing I'd want to know was how much time the whole process takes. And then you can determine whether that's worth it, especially like, you know, at your busier times of the year, you might not be able to put enough time to put a wholesale order out. You know, if you're busiest time of year is Mother's Day and your retail business is taking every minute of your day to handle that part of it, you know, it's not going to be worth also trying to add a wholesale account. And the thing is, we get so excited, especially when you have a new product or you're new to in business. You get just super excited that somebody wants what you made. And so a lot of times we've made the mistake of getting wrapped up in that excitement and not really fully thinking through, is it worth selling this item or this many of them or to this particular, is this partnership good both ways, you know?
Yeah. I noticed that you participate in Instagram giveaways. So I was wondering how you go about teaming up with other people for those types of promotions.
If I really admire somebody's photography, I will give them a free product for their giveaway with the understanding that I can then use their photography to either make content for our social media or to, with credit, of course, use in a listing photo for a lifestyle shot. And so it helps me get a different set of eyes and styling on a product without having to go out and hire a professional photographer and send a bunch of samples and get the pictures done. Just for the cost of the spoon itself and mailing it to this person for them to do their giveaway, I can get a styled photo to use. And that's a great trade.
And we know exactly how much that spoon cost us.
Exactly.
What's your strategy for paid advertising, like promoted listings?
Trying to kind of rotate things around a little bit, keep it seasonal. I don't want to promote things that are super time consuming or labor intensive. And also, if I start to see that the return is dropping, I'll go in and try to figure out what happened. You know, is it stale? The things that are up have been up too long and I need to cycle it out? Or, you know, am I promoting a lot of Valentine's Day stuff at Christmas? Things like that.
Are there any other factors you consider when deciding which items you want to promote?
I try not to promote things that are ready to go. I focus on the made-to-order items because I like to use the search terms that you get out of your promoted listings to help me do my titles and tags. So you need to kind of have something that's going to be up for a while, not just be up for a day and sell and go away. Because if they sell right away, then it takes like 30 days for the promoted listings to build up your bank of keywords that were used to find the item. Yeah, and I like to have those. So I need something that's made to order that can be up for a while for that.
So how often do you check in on them?
Daily at this point. I have it set where I look at yesterday and then I click the little tab to bring it up to so far today. And then I do that again the next morning just to make sure, because you never know, there's going to be that rogue spoon or mug that for some reason is showing 20,000 times and it didn't sell once. And it's good to stay on top of.
Because there's good days and bad days too.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, not every day is a home run.
Yeah. Do you have any interesting or memorable interactions with anyone on Etsy?
Big ones for me that stand out are always the people who are sending gifts, our items overseas to the military, family members who can't be there at holiday times. That always strikes a chord with me. And I'm like digging through what's the prettiest pattern we have? What's the best thing? I have to make this extra special. But just in general, I like the combos. It's nice. I have Ryan here full time, of course, but it's still not lonely, but you don't see your customers face to face working online the way you would if you had a brick and mortar shop. And so those interactions that we get through convos and through feedback and things like that fill that void for us.
So now it's time for the lightning round. We have collected questions from the forums and the Etsy Success social channels for you guys. So Adam Rabbit asks, what advice do you have for working with major retailers?
Get the compliance manuals, read them, know them, because they will charge you if you mess up and you tape the box this way instead of that way. I guess the main advice I would have with major retailers is to make sure you have a point of contact who understands that you are a small handmade business. Mm-hmm. They deal with factories and huge companies every day, and they just expect pallets of freight to show up. And having somebody on their team who gets that you're just one person doing everything by hand really helps when you need a little extra time to fill your orders or you need an exception on one of their compliance rules.
And regarding the time, be 100% honest upfront mm-hmm. with what you can and cannot produce.
Diane from Featherwind Studio says, can you point to one thing you did that helped your sales begin to soar?
I know one thing that Sarah did in the very beginning, and she's always done every day since then, is even when she was selling one spoon at a time or two sales a week, she always treated it as if this was a business. She incorporated under an LLC. She did all the paperwork to get it set up. In the beginning, when she would sell through her spoons, and like, you know, one week she'd sell five spoons, and she would literally take that money and go to the store and buy eight spoons. And then she'd sell through those and go to the store and buy 12 spoons. And just, it was always, she treated it like a business, not a side craft gig from the get-go. So I think that's one reason why we have such good customer feedback as well, is because we set the expectations. We really go to extraordinary lengths to meet them.
Natalie from Fishing in Faith asks, what sticks out as one of your best memories or moments in the years that you've been on Etsy?
It'd be easy to say all the press and the big fancy partnerships and having lunch with Martha Stewart and all those amazing moments. And those are all amazing moments. But I think what stands out the most to me is that first week when Ryan joined me, when we were looking at each other, just pinching ourselves that this was our real life and it was a real life that we built for ourselves. And then travel is really important to our family. And so we save a lot of our profits and take the children somewhere different every year. And so I would say on each of those trips, when we kind of stop and look around and think, we're here, we're having this experience and sharing this with our kids because of the hard work that we put in, because of what we built ourselves. Those are the moments that it really hits home for me.
It makes those long days easier to get through.
Thank you so much for answering all my questions, Ryan and Sarah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, it's been great talking to you.
As always, we'd like to bring this episode to a close with Shop Talk. For this segment, as you all know, we post a question in the forums and on the Etsy Success Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for you to answer by calling in or emailing us a voice memo. We got some great responses when we asked you what your biggest moment for your shop was in 2017. Here are some of the ones you sent in.
Hi, I'm Rebecca from Rebecca Yates, London. My biggest moment for my Etsy shop in 2017 was definitely making my first ever sale. I only opened it earlier this year, and the buzz I got when I actually got the notification through to say I'd actually sold something, which wasn't to my mum, was amazing.
Hi, this is Tanner from the store Skotsky. My wife Amy and I design and make metal and leather items. And our big moment this year was when we realized that we had replaced our major craft show income with income on Etsy, which allowed me to focus more on online sales, which is exactly what we wanted to do. And we got to spend more time together with ourselves and our daughter.
My name is Pablo Petralia. My shop is Harbour Tree, UK. My biggest moment in 2017 was a review that I received from a customer from the United States. That was in February. A couple of lines of this feedback is, my son has autism and textile issues, and this fits the bill. I think this kind of review might help a lot of parents with children with different affection. I get emotional and I love this review. And well, this is what we try to do every day. It doesn't make me think about the impact that we cause, you know, with our job, with our actions, how we go into other lives.
That's it for today. Thank you to everyone who took the time to fill out our survey so far. If you haven't already, please do so at etsy.me/podcastsurvey. This is our last episode of the year, but we'll be back in early January to help make 2018 your best year yet. And remember, subscribe on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts so you'll be the first to know when we're back. Thanks for listening.